She's a depressed 20-something with a college degree who copes with life by smoking too much weed, dodging cochinos as she rolls down the street.
Oye, mami, I wanna be your dog.
Aim higher, pendejo.
She's la marihuanera, as seen on IG.
That's me.
Marihuanera.
Howdy, and hello there, Marihuaneras. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Marihuanera, a podcast for potheads. It is I, me, her, she, soy yo, Mala Muñoz, creator and host of Marihuanera, a podcast for potheads. But I'm assuming that you probably knew that, and that's why you're tuning in, and that's why you're still listening, and that's why you might be interested to know that next week, June 15th, Thursday at 8 p.m., I am going to be performing at the Austinite Dispensary at 2009 East Cesar Chavez Street in Austin, Texas. We are doing an LA Takeover comedy show in Austin, Texas at a gosh dang dispensary hosted by Aldo Caldo, local comic and DJ. We have a slate of LA comedians. I have met these comedians at the Chatterbox Covina. You know I love Chatterbox. These guys are hilarious. Stevana Delgado being at the top of the list here. You know I co-host with Stevana Delgado at Chatterbox for Chatterbox Comedy Night on Sundays, and also at the Chatterbox Open Mic on Thursdays out in Covina. We've also got the likes of Daniel Cabral, hilarious comedian. You might recognize Daniel from Sleepover Pod, co-hosted with Vince Caldera and Luis Lemus. Well, Daniel Cabral is coming with me and Stevana down to Texas. We've also got Alex Durazo, hilarious comedian. You can see him all over. I've seen him at the Chatterbox. He's doing great. He's killing. Greg Sanchez, hilarious. One of the tallest Mexicans I know. He's going to be coming down with us to Austin, Texas. Frank Ulloa, another strong Chatterbox comic, coming down with us to Austin, Texas. And Daniel Alvarez, another hilarious comedian. You can see him at the Hollywood Improv, at the Hollywood Comedy. You could see him at Chatterbox also most recently. He's coming down with us to Austin, Texas. And we're going to be smoking and joking and toking, just like you know that this is my favorite thing to do. So we're going to be at Austinite Cannabis Co. That's Austinite Cannabis Co. on Thursday, June 15th, 8 p.m., Austin, Texas, at 2009 East Cesar Chavez Street. Again, Austin, Texas. Yeehaw and howdy, y'all. Tickets are on Eventbrite. You can also go to my Instagram at @Mala_Muñoz. Check the link in my bio, hit my link tree, and the Eventbrite link is there. You can also look up LA Takeover Comedy Show with Mala Muñoz and friends on Eventbrite. Again, this is Austinite Cannabis Co. in Austin, Texas. It's going to be a great time. Do not miss. This is my first time performing stand-up comedy out of state. We're doing Le Petit Austin tour. We're hitting open mics, we're hitting shows, and since there's so many of us, there's like seven of us coming from LA to Austin on this trip next week, we figured, fuck it, let's just do our own show. We have a whole lineup right here. So come through, check out my Instagram at @Mala_Muñoz, and in the meantime, sit tight, light up, tune in, continue listening, because I have an incredible interview in store for all of your ears with Jesus Trejo, comedian, actor, and now children's book author. He talks about his children's book, the inspiration, working with his father, how the book came to life, his hopes for the children's book, and his plans for more books in the future. We talk about his roles on hit shows like Gentified and Mr. Iglesias. We talk about him being from Long Beach. We talk about the show that he hosts, Tacos con Todo. I mean, Jesus does it all. He's hilarious. He's very impressive. And you guys are going to love, love, love this interview. So sit back, relax, light one, and enjoy this episode of Marihuanera, a podcast for potheads.
Buenos dias.
Buenos dias. How are you?
I'm doing great. I mean, I'm loving this like overcast weather. I don't know about you, but like I thrive in overcast.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I love it. It's like my, I don't know. I feel like I thrive. I mean, sure, sunny weather is great, but this right now, like the in between, like perfect weather and rainy weather, sign me up.
It's crisp.
Yep, I love it, man.
It's like refreshing. It's dewy.
Yeah, fresco, you get to wear layers, but not over bundle up. Yeah, I mean, it's like right in the, yeah, it's a sweet space for me. Yeah, thank you so much for having me, by the way.
Stopping by Marihuanera, podcast for potheads. It's great to have you. For those listening, please perk up your ears because we have Jesus Trejo, comic, children's book author, actor.
I'm trying to hit every quadrant. Yeah, I mean, quadrant. Am I saying it right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm trying to hit every quadrant. So, yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, thank you for having me on. You reached out. I'm like, hell yeah, I'm on. Yeah, for sure.
I appreciate it. I really do, especially because it's been really cool watching your trajectory and everything you've been working on since the first time I met you was at UCB at that Spanish Aquí Presents show.
Yeah, that's right. That was what, a year, 5 years ago?
Something like that before the pandemic.
Before the pandemic, that's true.
Yeah. And I want to say that there was an earthquake the night of that show.
Oh, snap. That's right.
Uh-huh. A big one.
Yeah. It wasn't like a, oh, I totally forgot about that. We were in the green room and yeah, a ton of comics and friends and we're hanging out. And then it was at the UCB that no longer is there. It's right on the sunset.
The sunset. Mm-hmm.
And then it started shaking. And then everyone, like, left.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I remember that.
And then everyone went back and we did the show.
Yeah, we did the show, yeah. We looked at the building and it's like, oh, it looks like it was built within the last 5 years. We should be okay.
Yeah, and we were, and it was great.
Yeah, it was fine. What was that the first time you performed there at like, a UCB?
Yeah, that was my first time. And then after that, I took, like, an improv class. And the last week of class was the shutdown. And then we went indoors and pandemic happened. And yeah, I mean, what did you do when the pandemic popped on the scene? How did that impact like what you were working on?
Well, I had just recorded my special. So like my special was recorded in November 2nd of 2019. And it was supposed to come out in 2020. So when the pandemic happened, it's like, you know, I couldn't tour off of it. Like traditionally you record a special and right after the special, you hit the road pretty hard and you go out there and you like promote it and you start working on the next hour, right? So people come to see you, they still see most of like that hour that you just recorded, but it's also like trying to build the next hour, right? And none of that happened. We were indoors. I mean, I got some good numbers on, you know, according to Showtime. It premiered and it did good numbers because we were all inside. But
Is this Stay at Home Son?
Yeah, Stay at Home Son on cool. Showtime. You could catch it now on like Amazon and you can stream it everywhere. But it was crazy because it's like it's like as a stand-up comic, you work so hard to get to the thing and then you get the thing and then you have this kind of like romanticize this idea of like this is what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna promote it and then I'm gonna start working on this hour. None of that happened. So it's like, man. Yeah, God has a sense of humor. So it was like, all right, what are you going to do now? So I had to pivot and it worked out. But that's basically what I did. It's like during the pandemic, I was just trying to figure out what I was going to do to one, write material and two, like as soon as the thing subsided, what I was going to do. Like, am I going to hit the road? Now everything's fine. But in that moment, nobody knew what the heck was going on.
And then did Tacos con Todo happen? That came out during the pandemic, right?
So the first season happened beforehand, right?
Okay.
So we had already recorded it. And then we did like a second season tail end of the pandemic of like, you know, we did it indoors over Zoom. And the numbers weren't like, they didn't reflect what they were on that first season. It's like, no, like I don't know that people were interested in just hearing the conversation. I think part of the show we found out was like, they wanted to see us out in the field and talking to the restaurant owners, hearing the mm-hmm. story, that kind of thing. So we did a third season, you know, which was really cool, out in the field again. And hopefully we're doing like a fourth one coming up real soon. So we'll see.
Maybe, oh, very cool.
Yeah, maybe Tijuana. We're doing like Tijuana or Mexico City. We don't know. It's still in the brainstorming stage. We're talking about it, but fingers crossed we get another season and hopefully we do it in homeland. So.
Oh, that's exciting. So you're doing kind of like an Anthony Bourdain type situation, like traveling with the food show.
And if I could do 1/18th of what Anthony Bourdain did, like that would be so cool. Food, I feel like food, comedy, and good conversation are like my love language. It's like any way I could get that is like, man, that's like the sweet spot. And like, yeah, it's like Anthony Bourdain just had a good thing going and I'm a big fan of his. So not that I could ever be, do what he did, but you know, it's like he's at a high level. It's like, I'm just, you know, if I could just talk, eat food, I'm good.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He's incredible. I've been watching like No Reservations and just kind of like, these past few months, I don't know, it's been very nostalgic. I've been like into rewatching things and like going back to old stuff and like revisiting.
What episode or anything in particular sticks out to you about Anthony Bourdain?
Okay, I'm gonna say his LA episode, because I do want to say, I was gonna ask you, I don't know if you see this when it pops up every 6 months, but there's always like this blip of LA has bad food. LA's not a good food city. Like there's no good food in LA. Like this discourse, like people do this like on rotation. Do you see this ever?
Sometimes I think other people try to channel or not channel. I think people project this idea because when it was like, when I go on the road, usually it's like, you know, we have Mexican food in town. They always bring that up. As soon as I'm in a conversation about food, they're like, there's some great Mexican food down there. But it's not as good as like you guys have it in LA. And I keep thinking about it. And then they go on to say, this weekend I was in Pittsburgh and they're like, oh, we got one great Mexican restaurant in town. He's like, but it's still not good compared to like actual Mexico. I'm like, that's understood. And then they're like, does LA have good Mexican food? And I'm like, yes, it does, because we're closer to the border. So I think the authenticity tends to kind of stick closer to the border, even though we're like 2.5 hours away with like medium traffic. But I don't know. I think we can put Mexican food up against food from actual Mexico any day here in LA. Like we got bomb stuff here.
Oh, totally. And I feel like people forget that there are different types of Mexican food. And I feel like a lot of people will slander like hard shell tacos and like grated cheese and sour cream and like that kind of more kitschy like Chicano stuff. Mm-hmm. But that's its own type of food. Like that's its own cuisine. Like leave it alone. Like there's a history. There's a reason why we're eating ground beef with like chopped up potatoes. Like, you know what I mean? Like this is its own culture and very different than like a Oaxacan restaurant.
That's absolutely true. And it's like, I think once you accept Mexican food as a whole, you start to see the little differences. I mean, the regionalisms of like, they do it this way, they don't do it that way. It's like, and I think LA has a great kind of a layout of that. You can go like anything from like a Oaxacan, within Oaxacan food, like moles, you have everything from guelaguetza to like corner tacos. It's like Oaxaca style. So it's it's like if you open yourself up and be a little open-minded, you start to see the little nuances and sometimes the changes are very minor, but if you pay attention to that, it's like, oh, you could really see like the flavor and the food come to life, I feel like.
Yeah, and you're from Long Beach, right?
Yeah, born and raised.
So what's the Mexican food like in Long Beach? Because that's its own ecosystem down there.
It really is. I don't know if you've spent some time out here in Long Beach, but it's like dope. Like I love it out here. Mexican food wise, I grew up going to this taco spot on Magnolia, where I grew up, Magnolia Avenue. I grew up on the east side, and I used to ride my bike downhill into this where the Taco Loco is, on the other side of Anaheim on Magnolia. And I don't know why, but that spot just had it perfectly. Like they had, you know, they would make tortillas a mano. Yeah, I mean, which you don't see. Not every Mexican restaurant will make tortillas by hand.
No.
This place did it every time. And then like on the weekends, you can go get some great menudo. Like my mom, I used to be so embarrassed, but my mom used to give me an empty olla and was like, go down there, Tony. Charge you 2 cups and then like measure it and dump it in there, and I'm walking back home with this olla. It's like that authenticity, that flavor, the way they did it, the señora that was back there. I would love to just go over there and say hi. I would ask for like a tortilla, just one tortilla with butter, while I wait for the like my order to be done. So it's like I think Mexican food is enjoyed at a higher level. Even, how can I say this, it's like it's not so much the food, it's experience.
Right.
And I think they, Anthony Bourdain, I think, talked about this, is that when you eat with your eyes first.
Mm-hmm.
And that couldn't be more true for Mexican food.
Oh, absolutely. Like a well-plated, just fully garnished with all the bells and whistles. It's a sight to behold. It's beautiful.
And I'm not even talking like some cordon bleu, Michelin star plated plate. I mean, I'm talking a plate that's plated in the most abundant, most ridiculous of ways, if that makes sense. Oh, when we were doing Tacos con Todo, we used to laugh, and it's very nostalgic. Like when you go to a taco truck and you see those neon pieces of paper and the font that they would write it in, like some capital letters, some lowercase letters, but like a Sharpie. I'm like, that, if you see that font, they don't have that on Photoshop. You can't get that.
That's custom.
Custom. If you see that, you know the food's gonna slap for sure.
Oh, that's so true. There are little tells here and there.
What are your tells that like a restaurant is about to hit?
You know, I love when there's a taquero or there's a truck and they bring out their own like little plastic tables and chairs and put them out on the sidewalk. And sometimes they're red or they're blue, like they're different colors. I know that's going to be fine dining.
That's as if they went the extra mile to make sure they didn't match.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And however they did it. For that. You know exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. Yeah. So they're great. Also like a place where like, if I walk up and they all like ignore me completely and don't ask what I want.
You got to ask around. Hey, ¿qué trabaja aquí? I mean, it's like,
who do I order from? Like, how do I give you my money? Where do I pay? Yeah.
You know what I started seeing too at taco spots in LA is like LA and even Long Beach, you can no longer buy a drink at the spot, if that makes sense. There is now a drink woman standing up to the side.
Yeah.
I'm like, God bless whoever thought of that, because I'm like, you're giving the whole other business to some señora in the neighborhood. Yeah, I mean, and she's like pouring up a cup of horchata, tamarindo, or just like bottled soda. I think like I'm all for it.
Yeah, yeah. I always think it's interesting, you know, how like the guy who runs the pastor, he's like his own guy. And like you order from him.
That's funny. He's like his own guy, just like the guy at the in the back of a fire truck driving the thing in the back.
The caboose.
The caboose, yeah.
It's the caboose, yeah.
Yeah, that's the Al Pastor guy. Yeah, I mean, he's doing his own thing in his operation.
Yeah, and that's everybody's favorite part. The caboose, the pastor.
The pastor, the steering wheel, yeah.
So, Jesus, in addition to the stand-up, Tacos con Todo, you also have been acting.
Yeah, I got a little stuff here and there.
You know, Mystery Iglesias, Hentified.
Yeah, it was, it's, you know, I love acting, but, you know, it's like, I think I'm still learning, and I like being on set and learning from, like, the people who do it full-time. I mean, I've been doing now stand-up for 16 years, and I've always been enamored with the art of acting. So whenever I get those opportunities, I mean, I take classes and all that stuff to kind of, you know, try to stay sharp. But when you see somebody like act on set, you're like, what am I doing? Like that, like that's the real deal. So
like a thespian.
Like a thespian. There you, it's such a fun word to say too. Thespian.
A thespian. You know what I
mean? Yeah. Yeah, it's so cool. I'm always very grateful when I get those opportunities to act. Like, you know, Mr. Iglesias was wonderful, you know, to be able to have a, you know, what's funny is I went to Wilson High School, and that show takes place at Wilson High School.
Oh, dang. In Long Beach?
Long Beach.
Wow. It just isn't, it wasn't just, it happened to be named Wilson A School.
No, it's a, so I found this out on set. So Gabriel went to Wilson High School as well. He graduated from there.
What?
So he's, you know, a history teacher at that school. And to be casted and play a teacher at that school as well, it's like there's too many coincidences.
Right.
There was one episode.
You're like, is anyone else noticing this? There's a lot of coincidences here.
Oh man, I started connecting dots. I'm like, yeah, it was like a beautiful mind. I'm like, wait, do you guys see? What was funny is that there was a scene by these lockers, I'm like, I got my ass whooped in front of these lockers. Like,
shut up.
I'm telling you, there was too many coincidences. And I was like, this is unreal. Like, sometimes you find yourself, I don't know if you've ever been in that situation where you like look around, you're like, wait, this is too much of a coincidence. Yeah. I mean, it's like, how did I end up here?
Yeah. Yeah. But the deja vu.
The deja vu. That's what it is. And you're like, this is crazy deja vu. And why did, like, what are the steps that I took to end up here?
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's like I had that that moment on set. It was really interesting. I still think about it from time to time. It's like, what are the odds of that happening? Right. And on one of the episodes, I got to dress up as a mascot too. I'm like, this is insane. Like, but yeah, we'll so that was really cool. And then Hentified was amazing. That was really cool.
Yeah.
A little quick cameo. I did a Spanish one in there. And yeah, the first show that I ever did, like sitcom wise, was I met somebody this week, and the only reason I'm in Pittsburgh, I'm at the Improv.
Okay.
And Derek and Dave, I was working with a Dave. So Dave tells me that he was at the pilot taping at my first ever sitcom. So it was Steve Burns' sitcom called Sullivan and Son.
When was this?
This was, I had hair back then. A long time ago. So this is maybe like 10 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you've been at it on the acting side for a spell, for a minute.
Yeah, I've been trying. I took acting classes when I was going to Long Beach City College. Yeah, I mean, it's like even when I transferred to Cal State Dominguez, like I was still taking classes here at the local Long Beach City College, like acting classes, improv classes.
Cool.
But yeah, it's like I had hair. It was, yeah, Sullivan and Son. It was produced by Vince Vaughn and Peter Billingsley from The Christmas Story. And I had a little role in it. I was like, I was a carpenter. Had my hair off to the side, my little comb over, and had my little beer. And so I've been a part of a couple shows. I mean, not a lot. And like I said before, I'm always so grateful for those opportunities. Yeah.
Very, very cool. I'm glad you brought up the comb over, so I don't have to bring it up. You brought it up.
I brought it up. You're like, yes.
Let's talk about it.
Less awkward. No, bring it up. Yeah. You want to know.
I kind of love how, like, you have, I've seen clips of jokes you used to do where the comb over is part of the joke, or the comb over is like a prop. Mm-hmm. You're doing physical comedy with the comb over. Mm-hmm. When did you decide, or when did you part ways with the comb over? Like, when did that happen, and how did that impact your comedy?
I parted ways when I started balding. I started parting it this way, you know what I mean, and that way. No, I'm playing. I parted my hair to make it look like I had hair. No, I held on to the comb over for so long because I'm like, oh yeah, I'm gonna fool everybody, you know. It's like I was laughing about it the other day. I was talking to my homie. He's like, hey, he's like, you had a hair routine. I said, I sure did.
Do you remember your routine? How many steps? What was involved?
Well, there was conditioner involved. and shampoo, and then there was like an oil that I used to put so it can look less burnt, apparently.
oiling it up.
Oiling it up. And in reality, I should have just cut it off. I mean, it was like, what was I doing? But it's like, that's part of like, you know, getting older, I guess, where it's like you kind of grow into, not that my hair was growing, but I grew into like more confident and going, it's like, what am I doing? You know, just shave it off. And it took a long time. But when I did, I was like, I should have done this a long time ago. And I feel a lot better. And I'm saving a ton of money on hair products. And my friends would be like, hey, buy Rogaine and put stuff in there so you can see if it grows. Like, there's something very nice of just accepting where it is and just shaving it off and going, hey, this is what I am. You know what I mean? Take it or leave it.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like bald with a beard is its own look. It's its own statement. It's a thing. It's a vibe. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah, it's a, I can't really grow a whole, like a perfect beard, but I'm like, hey, man, this is what I got. I try to shape it as best I can. And yeah, I mean, it's like, thank God I'm funny. So it's like, funny looking, I should say.
But isn't there like, there's like an industry of products for bald heads, right? Like, if you wanted like a 12-step bald head, like skincare routine, like you could, there's, the products are out there, right?
You know how I know there's a whole industry? Instagram knows that I'm bald.
They send you ads.
Oh, ads at every turn. Hey, would you like this 7-sheet blade thing for your head? It's like, do you want this thing? Or you can regrow your hair here. It's like, have you tried this? It's like, I don't want none of that.
Yeah, like, yeah.
That industry is really growing. I feel like it's like kind of the male version of like maybe getting work done, like for like, you know, for women, they, you know, there's things you could do to get like a breast augmentation or
right,
like
lip fillers
and stuff like that, which is fine. I mean,
yeah,
on whatever you want to do. And for guys, there's very much a whole industry that we are now kind of blowing up the spot right now, where it's like you can get tattoos where you get the dots to make it look like you have like stubble.
So that's crazy.
Yeah, it's as crazy as like getting a butt implant. Yeah, I mean, it's like
right,
it's the same vein, and I'm here for it. It's like, if that's what's gonna take for you to feel good, I mean, brother, go for it. Yeah, I mean, so
yeah, I feel like there's an innate human desire to like modify our bodies, and in all these different ways that just, I think we just like to like play with our appearance, you know.
That's a good point. I think at its core, it's something very interesting, right? Because it's like an image issue, right? So it's like I speak for myself. When I was a kid, I had this kind of like, I wouldn't say a problem, but it was a situation in which I was a bigger kid, and my parents would be like, "Hey, man, you gotta like slim down. You're getting pretty big," and they put me on diets, and it was like. So I feel all this modification comes from like a upbringing and diet and family. Yeah, you know I mean, so it's like all these issues, like that's not the root of it. When you see like a guy getting the tattoos or the hair implants or even the muscle implants, you see those on TikToks as well, or like for ladies with any modifications they do to their body. I'm like, the problem stems from that upbringing.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like diet, it's this, it's like image, you know, it's like how you see yourself, you know, your family telling you, it's like, te estás poniendo gordo, and then you lose a little bit of weight. Estás enfermo, ¿por qué no estás comiendo?
Right. Yeah.
Like, what is it? It's, I don't know. I find that whole area very interesting.
Yeah. I think Mexican parents in particular can be very just like, they like to pick. Something I've noticed is I feel like parents, like, we're their favorite subject. Like, they're low key obsessed with us.
Your favorite premise.
Yeah.
And I think with this one, I will generalize, but it's like as Latino, like first generations, like we have a thicker skin. Like when it comes to like somebody making fun of us, is like, there's nothing anyone could say that our parents haven't said to us.
It's very true.
So it's like, you know, me going to school, people talking about my crooked teeth. I'm like, I've heard it all. Like those are weak compared to the ones my parents told me. So it's like, there's something very cool. I think it the cool side of that is that you do build thicker skin.
Uh-huh. So
you're phased by it, but then later in life, it's like, yeah, it turns into something else, I guess.
Yeah. It's hilarious too, the way it happens, because like when Latinos talk about like for girls in particular, right? But for anybody, when Latinos talk about like a woman's body, like that body part that they're talking about becomes her whole identity. Like, you don't just have like huge chichis, you're a chichona. You don't just have like a big butt, you're a nalgona. Yeah, right. If you have a big nose, they could call you a narizona, a cabezona. You know, right. Like that's what you are now.
No hair, el pelón. I mean,
el pelón.
Big ears. I mean, el orejón. Yeah, I mean,
it's exactly.
Like, yeah, that's so funny. It's like the one thing that stands out will forever be the thing that stands out, and we won't let you forget it for some reason. And I think it's like even like with roasting. I mean, it's such a big part of comedy now. It did a big resurgence, you know, in the last couple of years. But it's like the idea of roasting is you roast the ones you love, and I think at its core, we understood that at a very young age. At least I did. For my family, I'm like, oh, this is like a way of like chiqueando, you know? It's like,
yes,
you know, it's like it's a weird form of chiquear somebody. I mean, which means like I don't know how you translate chiquear to English, but like just a cute way of it's very endearing. It's a very endearing way to acknowledge somebody's existence by pointing out their flaws, I guess.
Yeah. Like, I'm just joshing you.
Yep.
A couple of quick announcements. Thursday, June 8th, I am hosting Spanglish, presented by Paul Rodriguez, a stand-up comedy show at the Laugh Factory Hollywood on Sunset Boulevard. DM me with all the names of all your friends and family who want to come to the show, because I can get you free tickets. Thursday, June 8th at the Laugh Factory Hollywood, Spanglish, I'm hosting. I'll be doing 10 minutes up top. I'll be the very first person to go up. DM me at @Mala_Munoz for free tickets. And shout out to our sponsor for Marihuaneta Season 3, Chicali Products, a Latina-owned business that helps chingonas relieve pain, reduce anxiety, stress, and help with headaches and migraines with handmade CBD remedies. This is Chicali Products. The Chicali Products bestsellers are the CBD Corona Polisher, which is perfect for headaches and migraines. I have used these products when I've been sick, when I have not felt well, when I've been cruda, when I've just had headaches, and they really do help. And a lot of Latinas in LA swear by Chicali products. Also check out the CBD Mellow Out Tincture for anxiety and stress, CBD Cana Canela Rub, which is a non-addictive remedy for pain. Head to chicaliproducts.com and enter code MALA, M-A-L-A, at checkout to get free shipping on your next order. Use promo code MALA for free shipping and exclusive goodie bags at www.chicaliproducts.com. And Chelly, our main jefa over at Chicali Products, is an East LA born and raised Chicana queer brujita. And she first learned how to make CBD remedies for her mom to provide some relief for diabetic nerve damage. So go ahead and follow at Chicali Products on Instagram for her natural herbal remedies and content. Now back to the interview.
So you have a book coming out, a children's book.
I do, and I'm very, very excited. And actually, let me grab it. Hold on.
Okay, yes.
Boom, there it is. So I have been obsessed with kids literature since I was a kid. I basically grew up in a library. Like, I grew up going to the one here in Long Beach since I was a kid. It's not there no more. They tore it down. There's a new one now on in downtown. But the old main library in Long Beach, it was like this concrete compound looking thing. It looked like a bunker. But it was amazing because the kids section is I grew up there. It's like I grew up drawing and writing. That was like my whole existence. I mean, it still is to this day, like being creative and writing. So you know, to be able to have this opportunity to write this book is like, I put it up there with my hour special, to be honest, because this one truly has been a dream since I was a kid. So to be able to hold a book in my hand now, it's like, it's insane. But what's really cool is like this book deal that I got with, it was called Mind Edition, but they're rebranding into Minerva. And they're starting with my first book title, The Rebrand. It's an imprint of Penguin.
Nice.
So, you know, initially when we went out to like pitched the idea for it. It's like we went to like Simon and Schuster. We went to a bunch of places, and you know, we started, you know, getting offers, and then, you know, we started taking it out wide to see, you know, where we could get the better offer. And luckily, Mine Edition really understood where I was going with it. And the first title was based on my dad. So I grew up working with my dad. You know, my dad's a gardener. And from a very young age, I used to go out there and work with my dad. And it's just like this really cute story of like a father and son working. And, you know, we try to put like the whole working as a kid as a background. It's like it's not a sad story. We focus on like the cheery, cute, happy, funny part of the story. Is like there's no sense in kind of hanging our hats in this like kind of like sad story, you know, rather than it's like working with my dad and my dad telling me that he could tell time, mm-hmm. like how much water was in this jug. And I used to believe it as a kid. I'm like, really, you can tell time? He's like, yep. And when the water's gone, that's how I know it's time to go home. So I used to like think that was real. And I used to waste water so we can go home early. That's basically the premise of this book. I think the message in here is like really cool too. I was able to bring it around and have a message of like time and water are precious. They shouldn't be wasted. So I was able to wrap it around and, you know, tell this really cool story. Now here's what's really cool. I love that, you know, and big shout out to Maria Russo, who's the editor down there at Minerva. Just amazing. Like she really got it where we were able to have a dual release. So this book is coming out in Spanish too. And my girlfriend was able to do the translation for the Spanish title. And it's really cool. We got to see the Spanish and the English version already. And here's why I think that's important. I think more books should do double releases, not necessarily in Spanish and English, but English and in another language. So my first language is Spanish. And I didn't have full command of the English language till I was like in fifth grade.
Okay.
So I think it's, you know, and my parents didn't have any schooling. So it's like, you know, the Spanish that I did learn was self-taught. And when I used to go to the library, I remember I would go to the Spanish section and I started there. And I remember thinking to myself, like, I got to figure out how to like read. Like, I don't know if I really like, I don't know how to explain it other than it's like there was motivation for me to pick up the English language and really master it so I can read the rest of the books that my friends were reading.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was, you know, we had a press event a couple of weeks ago in New York, and I told them that little bookshelf with the Spanish titles in a library for kids, it's like the springboard into the sea of like all these other stories. But that little bookshelf should not be neglected by authors that are, or, you know, and whatever languages your first language, I think that bookshelf should not be neglected. And I'm very proud that they got to see the vision and understood it, and to have that dual release I think is really cool. I think they're starting something really cool that I think other imprints are gonna follow suit.
Yeah. That's super exciting. Also, because I think like here in the United States, we know enough about like when immigrant communities like raise their children here, the language death that happens like within 1-2 generations, like pretty rapidly. So having children's books in Spanish is a huge help because a kid will read a book over and over and over and over again. And that exposure is so vital, like at those young ages.
Yeah. And to be able to tell these really cool stories, I mean, it's like, you know, there was some, you know, conversations had early on. It's like, you know, telling the story about, you know, my dad's a gardener, that kind of thing. It's like, you know, I guess it's a little on the nose that my dad's a gardener, but the important thing here is that it's like, I'm not ashamed of how I grew up. I mean, it's like, this was a real story. And I think there's other kids out there who grew up in a similar situation. Actually, there was this, a woman I talked to recently. We were talking about the book and they got a chance to look at it and they were going like, oh man, like I grew up working with my dad and mm-hmm. they were out, you know, they had a different family business, but it was a very similar story. It's like, I didn't have a choice of like not working ever since I was a kid and I was able to carry something around. That's what I brought to the table. And as I got older, my responsibilities went up. And within that is that you almost have to find a way to still be a kid, because I think not most like first generation kids have this, they're born into this responsibility. It's just the way it is. If you want to get ahead as a family unit, there's a certain level of responsibility that you carry with. Not to say that that's right or wrong, but it's just, it is what it is. But you mm-hmm. find ways to be a kid within that. So yeah, this is a story, and it's, and the illustrator is amazing. Eliza Kinks out of Austin. She's so amazing. I mean, her style is just, she's an animator for like Nickelodeon and Adult Swim, but this is her personal like style. And I'm like, I love
very
it.
Cool. It looks
like the lens, like you're looking through the lens of a little kid. And I mean, yeah. she absolutely just nails it. Yeah. What a talented woman. And yeah. So excited that we got to work together.
Yeah. It's I'm super excited for you. I love the art and the premise, and I can't wait to get my hands on it because we have little ones in the family that I know would love it. And I love how you are also approaching the conversation about like, so, you know, it's a working class childhood and talking about working class childhoods, you know. I think that there's a lot of conversation out there, and there has been for many years, about enough with the princess stuff, you know, like enough with the princess stuff. And these are real experiences. And there's like millions of people like who can in some way relate and tap in. And those childhood narratives deserve that like fancy and whimsy and, you know, the fantasy of it all as well.
Yeah. And it's like to enter the group chat with this title of like books that are coming out, like children's book, like it's really cool because this one is a little different. It's autobiographical in a sense. It's very silly. It's a character that I think, you know, kids ages 3 to 8 will really relate to. And it's basically setting us up for the second title, which is based on my mom and her, the affinity she had for plants.
Cool.
So yeah, I think it's, yeah, I'm so excited. And it's, the book is going to be released June 6th. This one is released June 6th, on Father's Day. Yeah, we're going to do like a press run. We're going to do some, book festivals and stuff like that, which growing up, I was like, man, there is nothing bigger than a book festival when you're mm-hmm. a kid. Like when that Scholastic, what do you call it? The book chest that they would bring into the library, and it was
yeah. packed with books. The Scholastic Book Fair. Yeah.
That's it. Yes. I got to do a bunch of those this year, and it's just like, 8-year-old me is screaming right now, going like, heck yeah, we did it. Yeah. I mean,
that is so, congratulations. Congrats. Super exciting. Super cool. I love to see it. So it sounds like this is going to be a whole series of books.
Yeah. This is a whole series. This is the first one. Book two is already in the works. We're putting the last finishing touches on it and, you know, getting ready for a next year release. And I'm going to put it out there. Yeah. I mean, I'm a big person of like manifesting it. It's like, I hope to see this title on a New York Times bestseller. So I'm going to,
yes,
I feel confident in it. I think, you know, every box was checked with it. You know, the art is great. The story, I'm a little biased. I think it's pretty cool. I think we stand a chance of getting on these cool lists. Not that that's the reason I wrote it for, but, you know, I think it's a story worth telling and worth reading.
I know that a number of my listeners, my marijuana listeners, because they tell me they're moms who also like to smoke weed. And so I do not doubt that they're going to go out and buy this book when it drops. Can you share the title one more time and like where they might be able to buy it?
Yes, you can pre-order it now. It's called Papa's Magical Water Jug Clock, and it is illustrated by Eliza Kinks. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it on, wherever you pre-order books, you can go out and get it now. Shop local bookstores. It's going to make its rounds, so it's going to be in smaller local bookstores as well. And, yeah, anywhere you get books. So go out and get it. Pre-order now. Release date June 6th.
Do you have plans for like an audio book version?
Oh, are you kidding? I would love to do the audio recording of it. Yeah, I mean, it's like that would be really cool. There's some events actually coming up at those book at these book fairs that I hope is there's an opportunity to do a live reading, which would be really cool. It's like,
yes,
to be in front of an audience is like, yeah, I would love nothing more to do that. So I think that would be really cool. Yeah, I would like to do the Spanish and English reading of it, if there's an audiobook version of it, because I grew up with audiobooks of like where you had the book and the cassette and it would read it.
Yep.
To you, and then
hell yeah.
And they had that sound. It's like when you hear the bring, you know, it's time to turn the page. And because it took me so long for me to really learn how to read, I remember I used to be flipping pages and pages and I'd still be listening to the book and the book will already be closed. I'm like, oh man, I think I went too quick. Yeah. So I can't wait to do something like that. I don't know if kids nowadays know what a cassette, like that cassette audio book version is, but that's how I grew up with it. And it was like the best. So
yeah, they're on the kids and their parents, like there are podcasts for kids and like they're on Audible. Like the kids are tapped in to all of it. And the kids love YouTube. The children are on YouTube like hardcore. I want to say this. I want to throw this out there. You probably already talked about this and your whole team has mapped this out. Oh, I'm sure.
I'm all ears. No, I'm all ears.
But with the kids and their parents are going to love your voice so much. And we don't have a new Mr. Rogers, dude. Like,
oh, man.
They would love you.
Get out of here. Mr. Chewy in the building. Hell yeah.
They would love to hear stories from you because you have this great voice and this very warm personality. And of course, you're very funny. And I think that, like, it's been a long time since Mr. Rogers. There's always this chatter, too, about, like, the kind of canon, like, Road Dahl and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and Dr. Seuss, you know, how all their texts have to be edited for like in deep racism and stuff like that, because it's all like old white guys. So I don't know, like, I love the children's book angle with you too, because you have all of those other factors. And I'm like, I can see it. I can totally see the kids just loving you and their moms for yeah. sure. They'll play. They're like, yeah, well, let's throw on the Jesus Trejo story time hour. Let's all tune in. Let's all listen.
Just to hear my gargly voice.
Yeah, I'm predicting it. I'm calling it right now.
In the beginning. Yeah,
that's exactly what I'm talking about. Right there. Yes.
Well, hey. Yeah, from your lips to God's ears. Yeah, I hope it happens. And it's like, that's a space that I love. I mean, I love being silly. I don't take myself very seriously. So it's like, who better? I think the